She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And please remember, we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Love that concept. Very excited about today's show. Thank you so much for joining us today. The show is sponsored by the Fairfax Companies, and they are doing great things for the planet in every way they can. If you have an opportunity, please visit them at www.thefairfaxcompanies.com to find out about all they're doing with their recycling programs and just what they're buying back. And even if you're not in Tucson, just look at the model of recycling and sustainability they've created and maybe start one in your town. Okay, I'm very, very proud today to have as my guest one of my daughter's best friends. I can't believe you go full circle. And she is a wonderful, bright, excited human being who I have watched grow up into an incredible, powerful, intelligent young lady. Her name is Emma Greenbaum, and Emma is a Green Corps organizer. I never heard of Green Corps, even though I'm Mrs. Green, until Emma wrote Mr. Green and I a letter, I think over a year ago, talking about the mission and that she's involved with it and would I help support her. And I said, we need to have Emma on the show. So Emma, I'm glad you're here.
Hello. I'm so glad to be here.
I know. It's going to be exciting. I hope Emily is listening, too. I don't know if she's working, but I know she's up in cold country. So we will keep this totally professional to the extent I do. And because there is, it's incredible to me what Green Corps does. I want to tell our listeners a little bit about the mission. It's to train organizers to provide field support for today's critical environmental campaigns and to graduate activists who possess the skills, the temperament, and the commitment to fight and win tomorrow's environmental battles. And of course, that gives me a lot of hope. I love their wording. And I love that they talk about it has to take special skills, special temperament, and certainly a solid commitment to be in this arena. So Emma's going to share with us information about the organization, about what got her excited about it, and tell us a little bit about its 20-year history. Before we go to you, Emma, I'd like to remind people that they can listen to me here every Saturday at noon at MrsGreensWorld.com, and also to remind you that you can listen on your phone or your droid, which I do if I'm not here, and it's a pre-record. I listen to myself to make sure it's working. And if you do have to miss the show, please remember that all of the podcasts live on my website and are there for your listening pleasure. That's MrsGreensWorld.com. So thank you so much. Okay, Emma, tell us about Green Corps. Tell us about what it is and what made you decide to be a part of it.
Yeah, definitely. You'll have to pardon me. I'm just getting over a cold. I have my tea here with me.
That's okay.
So, yeah, you pretty much nailed it. Green Corps is a one-year training program designed to prepare recent college graduates for organizing in the environmental and social change movement. I grew up in Tucson and just really wanted to get out in the world and learn about the world's problems and how to fight them. So I went to school at American in D.C.
Right.
And I studied international relations and economics. And by the time I graduated, I knew a lot about the problems of the world, but just not a lot about how to fix them. So when I was on campus, I did a little bit of organizing. I was in some activist groups on campus. And one of the things we did is a few students and I were working on a campaign to get the workers on campus better benefits. There are many benefits that full-time faculty receive that subcontracted workers do not. So we focused on tuition remission. So if a staff member's child, let's say, got into American University, they could go there for free. So we ran this campaign. We got over 1,000 signatures in about 2 weeks. And when it came down to it, the university just wouldn't relent. And it was sort of in that moment that I realized that it's not just about shedding light on the truth, because people know the truth. It's really about organizing and being effective at building a lot of support and a lot of people power to get what you need changed. So I went to my Green Corps second round interview, and Aaron Myron, our recruitment director, who's fantastic, started talking about all the reasons we need more organizers in the environmental and social change movement. It was just extremely inspiring to me, and it was that moment that I was like, oh, wow, I can actually get better at this. I can actually learn skills to make me more effective in getting people together and building people power to change things.
Well, one of the things that I like about the entire branding of Green Corps is that they're very forthcoming and authentic about what they do. And I think that that's important. I think the word activist scares people, and mm-hmm. it shouldn't, because all it means is taking action. If you sign a petition, if you complain at a restaurant, if you, you know, there are so many examples. If you have a service provided to you and you're not happy and you let people know in the right way with the right temperament, that's being an activist. And I love that there shouldn't be a scary association with that, because all it means is taking action. And the environmental issues, to me, I continuously am shocked at the information that I find out about the planet, because I know when I had my show on Fox, if I said global warming, people didn't even like forget it. It was, they would just click, click, click. But climate mm-hmm. change was something different. It seems more benign. The truth is, what we're talking about are environmental challenges that face all of us. I mean, if you don't even want to focus on quote unquote global warming, there are so many environmental challenges in the air we breathe, in the food we eat. And I mean, it goes on and on. So to me, this is an organization about a lot of hope. So you applied and you got in.
I applied. Yes, I was lucky enough to get a spot in this year's Green Corps class. So I started this past August, and I will graduate this coming August. And then our alumni have just gone on to do some really incredible things.
So what happens when you're in the program? Like, what do you go a little bit over the curriculum, and are you placed with agencies? Do you work with corporations? I mean, tell us a little bit, literally, about the meat of the program. What happens when you're enrolled?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, again, it's a one-year paid training program.
Right.
And it starts with about a month of really intensive classroom training, where you learn some of the first skills you need to actually get out there and start building a campaign. But the bulk of the year is spent in about 3 to 5 locations working with partner organizations on some of the most critical environmental battles we're facing right now. So I can tell you just a little bit about what I've done so far in my Green Corps year. So my first placement was in Chicago, and I was working to organize in a neighborhood on the south side of the city for the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign. If you haven't heard of the Beyond Coal campaign, I would seriously suggest you take a look at the Sierra Club's website. They're just doing incredible, incredible things for cleaning up air pollution, which improves health. It improves quality of life for people who are living around really old, dirty coal plants, which is how it was in the neighborhood I was organizing in. It's better for the planet, better for our waterways. So they're really doing some spectacular things in retiring lots of coal plants across the country and preventing new ones from being built.
And, you know, you can even tie it to when you say, you know, talk about health. It impacts healthcare. I mean, it's all of these people that are breathing this air and getting lung diseases and upper respiratory infections, and the list goes on. This is what I'm talking about, where it's an inherently good thing. It's a win-win-win. It's the green trifecta. And it's when you talked about that, I want to ask you, too, were you aware of the challenges, the dangers to the environment that the older power plants, coal-fired power plants, the threat that they pose to the United States and to everybody? Because that air comes probably, there are particulates that probably end up in Tucson. Before you went to Green Corps, did you have a consciousness about what a detriment they can be?
You know, I actually didn't. Coal was an issue that I didn't know a whole lot about. There were several,
there are several organizers.
There are several organizers in my class who had done Beyond Coal work on their campuses. That's one of the fronts that Sierra Club is really fighting on, is rallying students around retiring coal plants that are owned by their universities. But I wasn't as involved with that, actually. I came at it more from being really passionate about social and economic justice.
Right.
And not so much the environment, but through my year with Green Corps, it is just really opening my eyes to how many struggles there are and how much of our lives these environmental problems affect.
So you went to Chicago, and what did you do? Like, tell us literally, what did you do when that was your field placement?
Yeah, so it's a little bit different. Every placement, every situation is a little bit different. In my case, there was a citywide campaign that had been built up over about a decade that started really in the heart of the neighborhoods where these coal plants are located in. So there were a couple of smaller community organizations who were working on the issue, and they had teamed up with the Sierra Club, as well as different organizations from around the city, the Respiratory Health Association among them, and built a really strong, really diverse coalition that was able to bring all of their power together and really move the campaign forward. So my piece of it was, while there was a lot of organizing happening already in the neighborhoods just north of the coal plants, just south of there had been some organizing, but there was really a lot of potential there. There were a lot of people who were angry about this, but hadn't really created a unified force. So we built up a campaign in Bridgeport, Chicago, which is just one of the most wonderful places I've ever been. It's an incredible community of people that are now my best friends.
Except for Emily.
Of course.
We can have little jokes on the phone since it's my radio show and you're one of her best friends. Okay. So now they're your new best friends. Okay.
Still adore your daughter. Haven't been replaced. It starts out with just getting out on the street and collecting petitions. Just standing, talking to one person after another, and first telling them about the coal plants, because some people didn't know about them, but a lot of them did, and a lot of people that I talked to had problems with excessive asthma attacks and that sort of thing, which definitely the coal plant pollution certainly contributes to asthma attacks as well.
So you literally stand out there collecting signatures. How do they respond? Generally, is there like a third of them are nice, a third of them are rude, and a third of them ignore you? How does it work? That takes a lot of guts, kiddo.
Well, it really does.
I mean, I'm the type that stops. You know that. It's like, oh, who is it for and all this. But I mean, some of my friends just doesn't happen.
You know, you always get varied responses. It depends on what campaign, but especially in Bridgeport, there were a lot of people who knew about it, especially when I would start talking about the health effects. There were a lot of people who had asthma and who had lots of asthma attacks that the coal plant pollution contributes to. But in general, one of the principles that we take on all of these campaigns that we work on is that the people really are with us. These are campaigns we run because we really believe that we have public support, and that's what we want to build up to counter, you know, bad policies and entrenched special interests with the coal and oil industry.
Right.
So, in general, I like to think that people really are on board. And of course, you know, you always run into people who are not friendly, but when you do meet someone who's really passionate about it, and when your work really, when it comes together, when you bring together a group of people who care about this and know how to make change in their communities and in their lives, that's really powerful. It makes rude people seem not very important.
Well, and it just seems to me that I talked to you this morning and your passion is so absolutely clear, and this Green Corps ignited it. I mean, you were on a journey. I'd love to talk about organizations, huge, huge multi-million dollar organizations that won't give benefits to to staff, but that could be another story that you and I cook up for another radio show, because it's appalling to me sometimes about sick leave and, you know, people that are making a couple million dollars a year and their staff don't get sick leave until they're, they're a year. And I'm like, really? So you can't get sick for a year? Gee, that's too bad. I hope I don't interrupt anybody's vacation. So it's really, this is a part of social justice as well. Okay, so
absolutely.
That was your placement in Chicago. And mm-hmm. what a difference from Tucson, Arizona. So what's going on now? I mean, it's going fast. Where's your placement now?
Yeah, so now my next placement is in Westchester County, New York. If you don't know
goodness.
Where that is, it's
I do.
Right. Oh, you do know. Okay,
I'm a
great.
Jersey girl.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So yeah, it's for anyone who doesn't know, it's just north of the city. And there now I'm working with another partner organization, Food and Water Watch, and their mission is to ensure that everyone has access to clean, safe, sustainable food and water, which is a really incredible mission. There aren't a lot of organizations working on food issues right now, so I was excited to be working with them.
So what specifically, what are you doing?
Yeah, definitely. So the campaign I'm working on right now is our Fair Farm Bill campaign.
Okay.
And if you don't know anything about the Farm Bill, it's basically a huge piece of legislation that gets passed every 5 years and really maps out how our entire food system functions. So the problem we're having now is that fewer and fewer corporations are amassing more and more control over every sector of our food system, from seed to plate, essentially.
Our big buddy Monsanto, one of my favorite targets.
Yes,
compromising
exactly.
the food supply, and they have lots more money than GreenCorp, I'm going to just venture a guess. So go ahead.
Yes, they certainly do.
They
but
do.
Again, we talk a lot in organizing about where power comes from,
yes.
and it's organized people
yes.
and organized money, and
yes.
we have the people.
We have the people, and I think they're waking up in record numbers. Okay, so the Fair Farm Bill. I'm aware of it,
Bill.
But tell people about it, too, a little bit more.
Okay, yeah. So what we are working on specifically is we want to deal with this issue of corporate control of our food system. People have a wide range of things that they care about food. Some people care about getting access to more healthy food. Some people care about toxins in our food. Some people care about, you know, treatment of animals. There's all sorts of different issues that people have. But really, we think the heart of all these problems is corporate control. So that's what we want to fight in this Farm Bill. So I am working in New York because Senator Gillibrand, who we are targeting, is on the Senate Agricultural Committee. So she basically has a lot of say in what goes into this thing.
Okay.
So what we want to see is a comprehensive competition title, which sounds kind of scary, but essentially what it means is that it's a set of rules to start reining in corporate influence on our food system. The first thing it would do is address how much control some of these companies have over the market, because in a lot of cases it's monopoly control.
Yep.
Which we shouldn't have in a marketplace where there's supposed to be competition. And the second thing is protecting against all the things that those companies use their power to do, like manipulate prices and write up unfair contracts that force small and medium-sized farmers out of their business.
Unbelievable. Okay, so that's huge. And, you know, I want to talk about the grassroots part of this. So
mm-hmm.
how are you collecting signatures? Is that what your field work is doing? I mean, how do you, Emma, what do you do on a daily basis to start, moving that needle a little bit, which would, it can be moved. That's the message I want people to get. It can be moved. And what are you doing? Is it the same thing of getting signatures so that people really know, people in power, that we're getting tired of it? What do you do on a daily basis to help move it forward?
Yeah, it absolutely can be moved. I'm probably going to mess this up, but one of my friends in the program, Adam, had a great quote. When people ask about what we do on a daily basis, he's like, well, it's part public relations, part media relations, and part arts and crafts. So
I love it.
And pardon Adam if you're listening to this and I messed that up. But So it depends. It depends on a daily basis what I'm going to do. A lot of it is, yeah, going out there and getting petitions collected. It's training people on how to collect petitions themselves. It's building a team of volunteers who have the skills to continue this campaign after I leave.
Okay, hold that thought. Press pause. Okay. Believe it or not, we're at a break. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. We're coming back with Emma Greenbaum from Green Corp. Stay here with me.
University of Arizona professor John Pollard asked the students in the Posada San Pedro Hall to consider bringing solar energy to the dorm. Just 3 years later, the Solar Cats, a group of students who took up the cause, have installed 44 solar panels on the dorm, saving 20,000 kilowatt hours of energy and reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 14 metric tons every year. Talk about students with a sunny future. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
She's the most exciting thing that's ever happened to you, and you want to spend eternity with her. She deserves nothing less than the best, an Abbott Taylor original. A diamond engagement ring as exceptional as she is that will make her eyes sparkle every time she sees it. Because we design and make our own jewelry, we can create something wonderful for every budget. I'm Abbott Taylor. I'd like to invite you to come see what Abbott Taylor Jewelers has waiting for you. With 35 years and thousands of original jewelry designs, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. We're proud to say using recycled gold, we have saved over 100 million pounds of toxic waste from this planet. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook, and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Hi, this is Mrs. Green with some great news about the all-new 2012 VW Passat. It's 2012 Motor Trend Car of the Year, best in class for legroom, and has standard Bluetooth technology. VW thought of everything by giving the Passat a brand new sleek design that conveys confidence and assertiveness. If you're looking for the best ownership experience possible and a great new Passat, visit Chapman Tucson at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill, but I have a bigger reason to give. My brother, Jim. When Jim was just 6 weeks old, he had a stroke. He had to rewire his brain to do most things we all take for granted. Thanks to Goodwill, Jim has a job and a sense of purpose. You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill is the best thing that ever happened to Jim. Please donate today.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And we're thinking today with one of my daughter's dear, dear friends, Emma Greenbaum. And Emma is a Green Corps organizer. And just listen to this. Green Corps' mission is to train organizers, provide field support for today's critical environmental campaigns, which you know touches my soul deeply, and graduate activists who possess the skills, the temperament, and the commitment to fight and win tomorrow's environmental battles. And I don't know about you, but the young people give me hope. It's part of what I'm working for, to leave the world a better place than when I found it. And Emma gives me great hope. All of my daughter's friends, my daughter Emily's friends and Katie's friends and Rachel's friends, they give me hope because of their consciousness of the planet. So Emma, we were talking a little bit about what you're doing in Westchester County for the Fair Farm Bill, which is, you know, it takes my breath away. I probably write about Monsanto more than I write about anyone. And it's not I want to talk more about Green Corps, but with Monsanto, it is a monstrosity to me. It is a monster, and it's the magnitude of their reach is unbelievable. And it's not just about their genetically modified seeds; it's their treatment of people and farmers and controlling the world's food supply. So there's my little rant. I'm glad you're working on this one, kiddo. So let's pick up where we left off. On a daily basis, you're doing public relations, media relations, and arts and crafts. Yeah. How'd I do that?
Again, like I was saying, basically the idea is to build up a core of volunteers who will continue the campaign after I leave, because my stay is only so long, only a few months. We want to train up leaders who can really carry it on. It does start with getting petitions signed and then asking people to come to a meeting, asking someone to write a letter, asking someone to ask someone else to write a letter or make a phone call. So it's really about getting people to that point where they feel like they can do that themselves. I'm glad you're angry about Monsanto too. I am as well. If you're interested in more stuff about GE corn and GE salmon, Food and Water Watch, the organization that I'm working with, also has campaigns going on those topics as well, on those issues.
And I think we need to tell people what GE is, genetically engineered. I mean, they're
genetically engineered. Yes.
Yep. And it's like drinking the Kool-Aid. We don't even know how much Kool-Aid we're being fed every day, and it's scary. Once I started going down that, it's like it's when you pull a string on a sweater and the whole sweater starts unraveling. It's like, wow, we better wake up about this. So I want to know about when you're placed. Let's leap ahead and then we'll leap back, because you know me that I have whirling dervish syndrome. What is your hope? You're gaining these skills. And I actually want to go a little bit backwards. What do they teach you about the temperament and about all of those skills that you need and the commitment you need to be a part of this? Because it is not for everyone. And I think it would take a certain type of temperament, not someone that's going to, you know, that's going to yell at someone that says they don't want to sign it, which I might be like, really, dude, you don't want to sign something about a genetically modified food? What are the kinds of things that they teach you, which I think is critical to the history and the mission and the survival of Green Corps? It's very encouraging to me.
Yeah. A big thing that we talk about a lot in terms of temperament is just that we as an organization and as part of the environmental movement believe that it's not just enough for people to take action by themselves or in their everyday lives.
Right.
Those things are extremely important, but we also need widespread, really systemic change, that we need better policies. we need better policies, and we need to start reining in corporate influence over pretty much every sector of our lives, and we need to make sure that the interest of the people is what is reflected in policy.
And not just the interests. I mean, to me, it's if people knew how connected all of these things were to their physical health, it'd be like, I think people want to know. They just want to be told in a way that they can process it and understand it, because I didn't know. 4 years ago, I didn't know, you know, a modicum of what I know now in my work as Mrs. Green. And it's illuminating, it's exciting, it makes me full of hope. But I had to get the information first. And I don't know if 4 years ago you knew how not bad, I don't like to say that, but how many challenges we face. That's a great way to put it.
Right. We face lots and lots of challenges. I think for me, one of the things that I want to see people that I get to work with come away with, and I know something that Green Corps wants to instill in us, is that you can do something, that even though these problems seem so gigantic, there's a way to go about it. There's a way to fight it. And it takes a lot of work, and it takes a long time, but you can chip away at it, and we're doing it.
And then there's things that happened just recently, and I wrote a blog on it, when the Keystone Pipeline was, the president vetoed it, it was stopped, and then it was reintroduced in the legislature in the U.S. Senate. And it was added onto a rider for a bill, and a word got out from one of these watchdog organizations. And Emma, they collected, and I don't know if you're aware of this, 880,000 signatures in about a 2-day period from around the country to bombard the Senate. And that is what I want most people to take away from this, is that there is hope, and all you have to do is find out where you want your voice to be heard and keep letting it be heard over and over and over, because there is so much hope. That is an example that I use. I've used it, I think, every day. People were not sheeple. we can change. Don't be afraid of the big corporations and how much money they have, because people talk and that matters so much.
Yeah, it definitely does. Definitely does.
So what are you going to, how long are you in this field placement for the farm bill, and what can people do about that? What is your advice to our listeners, and what can I put up on my Facebook, and what can I tweet about? What's the action that you want us to take?
Well, if you are in the White Plains area, if you're in the Westchester County area, I would strongly encourage you to send me an email. And if you'd like to put my email up on the website, that'd be fantastic.
I will.
But this is a federal bill. The Farm Bill it's the federal farm bill. So wherever you are, you can take action on this. And if you go to foodandwaterwatch.org, and click on campaigns and go down to the Fair Farm Bill campaign, you can sign a petition, you can make a phone call, you can write a letter, and all of those things help a huge, huge amount.
A lot, like really a lot. I know that in the involvement I've had in political lives before, if they get 20 phone calls, they start looking. What's going on? What's our constituency saying? So it doesn't take 880,000. Okay, so back to the organization of it. Sometimes do you, with Green Corps, help to like form little mini organizations, or do you partner with other local organizations? I know you mentioned big ones, where they're actually then you planted a seed and you stay in touch with them and they become their own little active community. Does that happen?
Yeah, that's definitely the idea with every Green Corps campaign, is that you leave behind the campaign still running. So you've built up a core of volunteers that take on the responsibilities of the campaign and continue with them. So essentially, across the 20 years that Green Corps has been going, there have been groups of volunteers activated across the country who, you know, some people fall away from it, but a lot of times people continue with it and continue to be organizers for both the campaigns that Green Corps organizers came to work on, as well as other issues in their lives that they saw needed changing. So in my case, I was organizing in Bridgeport, and there's still a group of people there that are organizing around a lot of different issues, including the coal plants, even though we've had some awesome success on that recently.
And I think we should talk about that too. Let's not forget to talk about that success, because it's pretty powerful.
Sure. It's fantastic. Should I talk about that now?
Yes, sure.
Okay, great. So, the coalition, the Chicago Clean Power Coalition, as well as Mayor Emanuel's office, he's the mayor of Chicago, and the company who owns the coal plants have been going on and off in negotiations for a little while, and just found out, there's an article in the Tribune this past week, that Mayor Emanuel's office has issued a deadline for the company to come up with an agreement and either clean up or retire the coal plants.
Is there a time limit on it?
They are required to shut down in 2015 and 2018, I believe, the two coal plants, Fisk and Crawford, respectively. But this would move up those dates. So we might see an end to the pollution a lot sooner than that, which would be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I know. Like you said, the wheels turn slowly. I mean, it's like, it's to allow it to go on that many more years is rather daunting, but to be making progress is what we have to look at. I mean, it's not going to be forever. And, you know, they could put scrubbers on them. They could remove a lot of the particulates, but that costs money and that would affect earnings per share. And so that's not on the table. It's okay.
Right. Okay. What we want to see is an end to coal pollution entirely. That's the goal of the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign, is to see no more coal burning.
But then so there's the other part.
It's a really great victory.
It's a great victory. The other part of that, and I don't know if you get into it even in your training or in the thought process, because you have a very clear mission, but like with the Sierra Club and some of the guests that I've have on, the reality is that when a coal plant closes, a lot of times people in the local area lose their jobs. I mean, that's the absolute hard, cold facts. So sometimes the very people that you're trying to help are against it because they don't know how they'll earn a living. Is there to me, the hope for that always is the green energy jobs, which in the Southwest are flourishing. Jobs for solar, they can't, you know, find enough solar installers. We're doing a lot more wind. Our electric company, Tucson Electric Power Company, is at the forefront of really promoting every type of solar that they can get in the hands of a homeowner, for community solar purchasing to, you know, tax incentives and whatever. So do you ever address that piece, your organizers or your partners, like what's going to replace those jobs and provide the energy?
Yeah, there's actually, so within your Green Core class, people are working on different campaigns. So there are a team of us working on the Food and Water Watch Fair Farm Bill campaign right now.
Right.
There's also a group of organizers launching the Fair Share Alliance in different states across the country, and that is aimed at promoting clean energy jobs and making sure that there are the proper tax incentives in place to allow for more green jobs.
Right, right. And it kind of cracks me up because people don't really get how sick our country is because of some of these we're paying for it one end or the other. We're paying for it in our health care that people need to avail themselves to because they got sick from the water or the air that they're breathing. So it's stopping it and moving in a greener direction really does create systemic change. That's what excites me about all of it. It's good for public health. It's good for the environment. I mean, there's just no downside. It's good. Economically, if it's done correctly. So I don't see any end to the upside to green jobs and certainly not to Green Core. So the Fair Farm Bill, is there anything else you want to tell that? I will put that up on my website and I will put a reference to foodandwaterwatch.org. Is there an issue where you're working about clean water, or does everybody there, I mean, is it polluting rivers, or is it just about trying to get the Farm Bill changed?
Yeah, our campaign is focused on the competition title, on getting a comprehensive competition title introduced in the next Farm Bill. So it's pretty specific. What I like about it is it's very specific, but it has very widespread.
So what does that mean? Explain what that means.
The competition title?
Yes.
Yeah, so I said a little bit about it, but it's basically a set of rules that would rein in corporate influence on our food system. Including assessing whether companies have monopoly control over their market, and basically telling the USDA and the Department of Justice that we have to start dealing with that problem and do something about it, because they can essentially edge small, medium-sized farmers out of the market. They just can't compete anymore with these huge corporations. So, for instance, if there are only a couple of different milk processors.
Right.
In
perfect
an area.
Example.
I say milk,
right.
Right. I say milk because New York is traditionally a huge dairy farming state, and that's sort of on the decline, at least for small, medium-sized farmers, because they can't, in a lot of cases, they just can't compete in the marketplace. So I met a farmer at a farmer's market about a month ago who was telling me about how essentially, there are such strict, and there are only a couple of different companies who you can sell your milk to, a couple different companies who process the milk, and they decide that they're only going to take milk from farms that sell over however many thousands of gallons to them.
Right.
If your farm's not big enough and you don't have any other options, you go out of business. Or if they have really strict refrigeration requirements and you are not able to meet those because they're too expensive or for whatever reason, you go out of business. So we're really losing our local food systems, which is what we want. We want local, healthy, fresh food instead of factory farms and corporate agribusiness control in our food system.
Now, what is it? I'd love to know a little bit about the scene back there. We're going to have to take a break in a minute. We have like 1 minute, but when we come back, I'd really like to talk about what you see, having lived in Chicago and visited that and being in Westchester County, about the growth of local farming and the growth of gardens on rooftops and on balconies and in people's apartments. I mean, I read a lot about it, and I'd love to hear from your perspective how you see that. I mean, here, our food conspiracy co-op is helping. They're providing grants to local farmers, and our farmers markets are growing like crazy. So let's talk a little bit about that when you come back. Emma Greenbaum from GreenCorp, please stay here with us. Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. Did you know that the 2012 VW Beetle has been completely redesigned, that it has exciting new features, look, and performance, and that it is one of Oprah's best things for 2012? The best news is Chapman VW has them in stock. Check out the new Beetle at Chapman VW at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan, or visit them at TucsonVW.com. Be sure to tell them that Mrs. Green sent you.
What if you had simple and easy solutions to live, work, and play green? Green Living Magazine, the premier green lifestyle magazine, brings you the latest in organic cooking, gardening, health and wellness, chef and celebrity interviews, as well as easy solutions to clean up your everyday life. Visit greenlivingaz.com for the latest in green news. Buy your subscription and view our network videos. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, and again at greenlivingaz.com.
At the University of Arizona, we're putting solar know-how to work. And it's not just our researchers. Our students are on the job as well. Our student solar racing team, using recycled solar cells from NASA, designed and built a car from scratch that gets the equivalent of over 3,000 miles per gallon. Talk about students who will go far. Really, really far. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And our guest today, live from New York, it's not Saturday night, it's just Saturday noon here in Tucson, is Emma Greenbaum. And Emma is a Green Corps organizer. And if you just started listening, Emma's part of an organization whose mission is to train organizers, provide field support for today's critical environmental campaigns, and graduate activists who possess the skills, temperament, and commitment to fight and win tomorrow's environmental battles. So you talk about a show with hope, possibility, and change. This is the show. I just love it. And if you didn't hear it, Emma is one of my daughter Emily's dearest friends, and I would say all of her friends are so committed to building a world that is just a healthy, greener place for us to live. So Emma, thanks for taking time when you're not feeling well out of your busy day to be a part of Mrs. Green's World. I'm thrilled to have you here.
I'm so happy to be here.
Okay. And it's the boys are back in town, but the girls are here now. Actually, the women are showing up. So let's talk about the... I lost my train of thought, because before we get off, I want to talk about how Green Corps is supported and some of your personal view on what our challenges are. But what were we talking about when we got off? I got so excited about having my daughter's friend on the show. That it's, like, it's okay. Let's go back to Well, let's start with how is Green Corps supported? Because I don't want the show to be over. There are not corporate sponsors on the website. I'd love to know how this is supported. Is it strictly donations and campaigns as a nonprofit?
Yes. No, we do not accept any corporate money. Well, for part of it, we do a lot of grassroots friends and family fundraising. So okay. I sent you a letter, which is how this whole thing got started. We ask our friends and family to support our work and tell them about why we care about the environmental movement and why this work is so important. So that is a portion of our funding. It's just through our immediate social networks who really believe in this work and believe in what we're doing. We get part of our funding from the organizations that we partner with.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yes, exactly. So it's a training program, but we are also providing, that field support for critical environmental campaigns. So the organizations that we partner with contribute to funding.
Yeah, the people power. You're the people power.
Exactly. We like to do a lot with a little in Green Corps. We're pretty scrappy.
I like that. Okay. And I have to ask this. Is it mostly, it makes sense to me that it's mostly young people. Is there an age, like if you wanted to, if you were having a midlife crisis and you wanted to learn how to do this, can anybody apply to Green Corps or do they really want to focus on a younger demographic? What are the parameters for someone becoming a Green Corps, organizer?
Yeah, well, I wanted to talk a little bit about this just because we are still accepting applications for next year.
Okay.
So if you're a senior in college or you just graduated or anything like that and you're looking for a way to work for social and environmental change, if you're passionate about the environment, I would seriously encourage you to apply. You can just go to greencorps.org and submit a cover letter and a resume. Because we're filling out next year's Green Corps class, which is super exciting.
Can you put your areas of interest, or do they place you? How does it work?
For placements, they place you where they need you based on your skills, based on what campaigns need what. But they do take your preferences into account. In my case, this doesn't happen to everyone, but I've pretty much gotten exactly what I wanted to work on both campaigns so far.
Which is really impressive to me because you're in cold country. I mean, this is a Tucson girl that I never saw wear anything but flip-flops and fashionable boots. So, and then now you're in Chicago and upstate New York where it's going to be 78 here today.
Oh, yeah. It's quite an adjustment. I really got the shock out of me moving out to D.C. for school.
But.
But yeah, in terms of people who apply to Green Corps, it is mostly it's mostly seniors in college or recent grads. I had a year in between, so I graduated, and then I had a year before my Green Corps year started. Some people start right after they've graduated, but there's no limit on it. There's no age restriction on applying for and doing the Green Corps year. It just usually is. The people that end up in the class are recent college grads.
Yeah, and it really makes sense that would be the profile. I mean, it's a way for you to explore different options before you commit to a path in your life's work. So it just makes sense to me.
Okay. I might get the story wrong, but there was someone who was quite a bit older. He was a middle-aged individual.
So like he was in his 90s, right?
Yeah.
Remember who you're talking to.
Something like that.
Yeah, 90.
He if I get the story right, I might be messing this up, but I believe he was a lawyer and sort of went through something like a midlife crisis and applied and did a Green Corps year because he wanted to learn how to organize. So it does happen.
It might happen to Mrs. Green. That's why I'm asking. I mean, I'm really on a path that is like a trajectory to where I'm not sure. I just know I love it.
In terms of, it's a lot of college grads, but in terms of what we have all done in our lives, it's pretty varied. So, we get a lot of environmental studies, environmental science majors, but there's a girl in my class who studied
philosophy and physics, or philosophy and economics, I believe.
Okay.
And I studied economics and international development. So what you study isn't as important, but having a passion for social change, having a passion for the environment, and wanting to see a better world is extremely important.
Right. It's really extremely important. Has this journey helped to direct you in terms of when you're finished? Has it helped you direct you in terms of what you'd like to focus on? And also, does Green Corps help with, you know, like if you wanted to work with, you know, Bill McGibbon, which would be one of my life's dreams, from 350.org. Is that, that's his organization, right? Has it helped to make it clearer for you which direction you want to go in your commitment to social justice and environmental stewardship?
Yeah, definitely. It's been quite a journey. Like I said, I wasn't hugely into the environment and didn't know a lot about environmental problems. I knew sort of vaguely about things, but nothing like how much my awareness has grown. I was always sort of into the social justice side of it, and then I talk about this story a lot, but one of my best friends in my Green Corps class, Macy, was super hardcore into conservation. She just wants to see as many trees as possible saved. She wants to save all the rainforest, and that was not something that I cared as much about, and she was on the other side. She cared more about conservation and wasn't as interested in environmental justice or in social justice. But sort of through our friendship and through our Green Corps year, we're sort of both realizing the virtue and the importance of the other side of it, of the other side of the movement.
So there's the cross-pollination effect, as I call it.
Absolutely.
So where's your heart living? What would you like to do every day when you got up after you're finished with Green Corps? Do you have some sense of that?
It's an interesting question. We're all sort of getting into the jobs after Green Corps mode and thinking a lot about that. Both of the organizations I've worked with thus far have been fantastic. So working with Sierra Club or working with Food and Water Watch after Green Corps would be fabulous. I'm certainly drawn to more community organizing. I really like to work with people. So hopefully I'll be able to play to those strengths. But yeah, it's actually funny that you mentioned Bill McKibben because he is on he's on the advisory board for Green Corps. We had training in December, and we had a bunch of our alumni and others come and basically teach us, talk to us for a day. And Bill McKibben couldn't be there, but he Skyped in to talk to us at training, which was just incredible.
He's on my bucket list. I can tell you that right now. We want to get him to be interviewed on the show, and he's one of my heroes. I mean, he talks about making change happen.
Maybe we could talk about that after the show.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, definitely. But our alumni have just gone on to do some really incredible things. So I know that the sky's the limit. The conservation director of the Sierra Club, Sarah Hodgden, is a Green Corps alum. The executive director of MoveOn.org is a Green Corps alum. Phil Radford at Greenpeace is a Green Corps alum. So these are all people who are very influential in the environmental movement. The organizing director for the Sierra Club, not a Green Corps alum. He always jokes around about that, but he is on our board and is really committed to coming and helping with training. So, and he's been a real inspiration to me. It's really cool to be in the spot where I've made so many connections with people who are really influential, and I feel like I have a lot of doors open to me, which is a really exciting thing in a really bad economy.
I know. I mean, it truly is. There's so many facets to this, and to me, I think it's going to be ever growing.
Absolutely.
It's exciting. What do they say in your training, and what is the general feeling among your peers about the importance of social media in what I call activating the environmental matrix? Is there an emphasis put on that, or is it more a person-to-person, literally see people and connect with them one-on-one in the streets and in where they work and in their neighborhoods?
It's both. We've done a lot of work on social media and how to use it and utilize it to the benefit of your campaign and what you're working on. Social media is not so much my thing, so I've definitely benefited from the trainings that we've done. But we always like to talk about how as important as as important as those tools are, that's all they are tools. So when it comes down to it, organizing is about talking to one person and then talking to another person, then talking to another person.
And even when you're, to me, the important thing here is when you're talking about social media, people are absolutely inundated and buried with it. So if you're going to mm-hmm. use it, which is what one of my mantras is, make a connection with people. I answer my tweets. I put personal things up about, you know, from my heart on the Mrs. Green Facebook page. I don't do contests, which are, you know, if you're selling something, that's a great idea. But for me, if you're using social media, you have to keep that authentically committed space of connecting with people about the issues that they are interested in as well. It's about, you know, building your own tribe. So I think that's a really good answer. But I think it's right. important and powerful when I start getting tweets to spread the word about a signature, you know, for the Senate, for the Keystone Pipeline. That's time sensitive. That has to happen in a hurry. So I start retweeting and get people to write in and put it up on my Facebook. So I think there's a speed that really helps. That social media can be a really useful, powerful tool for.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Now here's the question in the last like couple of minutes.
Yeah.
I want to ask about you, Emma, and what you and your peers really believe that are some of the biggest challenges that face us as a nation and a planet right now and in the days to come. I mean, there are the obvious ones about coal and our food supply. What do you think the clock is ticking on? Are there things that you have a heavy heart about that you would like people who are listening to start thinking about? It's all about you.
Yeah. Well, I hate to plug these again, but I really do think that the fight about the Farm Bill and the fight against coal are two of the most critical issues we're facing right now. when it comes down to what's in my heart, I think that it's all about corporate control. All the root of all of these issues is corporate control in our government, corporate control in our lives in general. I think it's in a lot of ways disconnecting us from people. It's we don't have the same type of geographical communities that we used to, and one of the reasons that organizing has always been so inspiring to me is because it's a chance to make those connections and it's a chance to make community. What's in my heart is seeing less corporate control in our country and our world.
And it's kind of like everything. It is the food we eat. It is the gas we buy. It is the air we breathe. I mean, there's so much of it. And what I loved the most about this show, the takeaway for me, is the reminder that we have voices and they can be heard and we can bring about change without a lot of money. And we can go up against the big dogs because we just need to organize. Women, mothers, got Walmart to move the needle about putting hormones in milk because they read enough to know that cows that were ingested with growth hormones were getting fed to them and their children and their babies, and they got it stopped. So that was the big, huge pressure. It wasn't money. It wasn't any organized, you know, highly funded national corporate group. It was moms that were saying, we don't want growth hormones in our milk, and they stopped it. Another one for me is Hershey's chocolate. There's some success about the dark side of chocolate and where chocolate is sourced. And I say to people, don't buy Hershey's Kisses, please. I used to love them, and now they're starting to move forward the needle a little bit because there are a couple of groups, grassroots groups that said, please look at the dark side of chocolate before you buy it. So we buy nothing but fair trade right now.
Fantastic. That was actually what got me into activism in the first place, was I started finding out about trade and trade justice. but yeah, I really do believe that we can take on these problems. It's doable.
And it's happening. Yeah, we can do it.
It's happening. It's happening.
So tell us about your website. If you want to give your email address in case people do want to get a hold of you, I can post it as well. But tell us about how people could donate to Green Corps.
Yes, definitely. If you go to greencorps.org, there will be a place that you can donate. And if you are inspired by this work, I would highly encourage you to do so. We really do need the funding. And trust me, your dollar gets stretched just as far as we can.
It doesn't have to be $100 a month. I mean, if everybody that listened did $20 a month or 10 or whatever they could afford, that's, again, the power of the people collectively.
Absolutely. And to us, it's so much more important to get small donations from lots of people, because then we know
it's
not
grassroots.
Only is it more inherent.
Yes.
Exactly. It's inherently more democratic. We know that people are with us, and we want to make sure that we're spending people's money wisely.
Okay. Love you dearly. Yeah. We're going to go. It's time flew next week. Seth Lightman, Green Living Guy, talking about health in our home. How important is that? Thanks for being a part of Mrs. Green's World. Make it a great green week. Emma, thank you so much.